from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. Firefighters are turning the corner on many of the largest fires burning throughout the state. The Carr Fire in Shasta and Trinity counties, the Mendocino Complex, and the Ferguson Fire threatening Yosemite National Park are all roughly 50% contained or more. But the Holy Fire in Orange and Riverside counties is just 10% contained. So far, it's burned more than 10,000 acres and is threatening thousands of homes. Over 20,000 people there have been evacuated. So let's go back north to the Carr Fire for a moment. An eighth person died yesterday in connection with that massive blaze. 40-year-old Andrew Brake was a heavy equipment mechanic for Cal Fire. He was driving north on a state highway towards the fire in a Cal Fire pickup truck. California Highway Patrol Officer Ken Reinman says Brake missed a curve just after midnight and drove off the road into a tree where the truck caught fire.
As a result of the collision, the vehicle became fully engulfed and the solo driver was deceased inside the vehicle.
Brake's the fifth firefighter to be killed since the recent blazes broke out around the state. California's legislature is talking about fire this week. Yesterday, they were examining who should pay when power lines touch off destructive blazes. KQED's politics and government reporter Marisa Lagos has more.
Lawmakers on a special wildfire committee heard hours of testimony Thursday on perhaps the most controversial question before them. Should electric companies have to pay for damage when their equipment starts a fire, even if they aren't negligent? It's not a hypothetical scenario. State fire investigators blame PG&E, the state's largest utility, for 16 of last year's devastating Northern California wildfires. Those killed dozens of people and destroyed thousands of homes. Governor Jerry Brown wants to change state law so utilities are treated more like flood districts, who aren't on the hook for damages if they followed state safety and maintenance laws. But not all lawmakers were buying the argument that publicly traded utility companies are similar to government flood districts. Here's Santa Barbara Senator Hannabeth Jackson.
Well, I guess I'm troubled by the fact that you're trying to compare the two as apples to apples when they're really not.
Some of Jackson's constituents are suing Southern California Edison for the gigantic Thomas Fire, which devastated the Central Coast and until this week was the biggest fire in state history. But utility officials argue their survival is on the line. Steve Malnight is the senior vice president at PG&E, which has been ramping up political donations and lobbying spending in recent months.
California's existing liabilities laws weren't made for the new normal that we face going forward of these climate-driven wildfires.
He warned that if PG&E pays out billions of dollars, it won't be able to invest in cleaner energy, and the state's ambitious climate change goals, one of the governor's signature accomplishments, will be at risk. Brown says he's trying to find middle ground.
My goal was to try to find a reasonable balance that would reward players, including utilities, for doing the right thing, but make them liable when they didn't take the steps that common sense and prudence would warrant.
It's now up to lawmakers to decide how to strike a balance, and they only have 3 more weeks until the end of the legislative session to do it. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
Let's turn now to immigration. Nearly 600 migrant children remain in U.S. custody 2 weeks after a federal judge's deadline to reunite nearly 3,000 of them with their parents. KQED's Julie Small reports reunions of these remaining families are expected to take longer because many of the parents have been deported.
Federal officials report that more than two-thirds of the children have parents who were deported or left the U.S. Many kids have been held in government shelters for months. Reuniting them will involve multiple agencies and foreign governments. U.S. attorneys say a plan to do that is pending approval. The government also reports that 163 parents declined reunification with their children, something attorneys with the American Civil Liberties Union question. The ACLU is asking the federal judge to order the government to provide contact information so advocates can verify that parents made the choice voluntarily. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
Meanwhile, California lawmakers gave the thumbs up to a bipartisan request for an audit of Los Angeles County's Child Welfare Department following the death of a 10-year-old boy, Anthony Avalos. The Department of Children and Family Services received multiple calls over the years from family members and people at the boy's school concerned about his well-being, yet there was not an intervention that saved him. It's being reported that the boy's sexual orientation may have been an issue at home. Here's State Senator Ricardo Lara, one of the lawmakers who requested the review.
You might think, you know, this is another audit. We'll see what it yields. But I hope we're able to really get the collaboration of LA County. We've, I think, really drilled down in this audit to get to the specifics about how are LGBTQ youth identified and treated within the system, and how do we protect our LGBT children that cannot ultimately protect themselves.
A similar situation occurred in 2013 when an 8-year-old boy was abused for months, allegedly because his family suspected he was gay. Well, this week, the National Association of Immigration Judges filed a formal grievance against the U.S. Department of Justice and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. These judges, who deal with civil immigration cases, argue that due process in America's immigration courts is increasingly threatened by Donald Trump's get tough immigration policies. In Los Angeles, KCRW's Saul Gonzalez met one immigration judge who's sounding the alarm.
Judge Ashley Tabador is so worried about what's happening to America's immigration justice system, she wanted to meet me on her lunch hour outside the U.S. Immigration Court in downtown L.A. It's the only time she has free.
Do you have enough time to eat and talk to me?
I'm fine. I'd rather put in this time during my lunchtime than worry about some food. I like to have these issues communicated to the public as quickly as possible.
Tabador, who's also president of the National Association of Immigration Judges, says under the Trump administration, the independence of these judges is increasingly under assault because of political interference from higher up.
What we are seeing now is basically just flagrant crossing the line into the direct intervention of the decisional independence of the judges.
In particular, Judge Tabador says the U.S. Department of Justice under Attorney General Jeff Sessions is emphasizing speed and toughness over hearing cases fairly and carefully. Sessions has established case quotas for immigration judges up to 700 a year. And Tabador says he's increasingly willing to intervene in cases if he thinks a judge has been too soft.
They are looking at the court as a prosecutor would, which is to say, how many cases can I get through the system, how fast? Not really taking into consideration what it means to be a judge and what it means to have to take a look at a case individually.
And Judge Tabador asks us to remember the people appearing in immigration courts. Many are fleeing violence and unrest in their native countries and seeking asylum in the U.S. She says if judges are pressured to make quick decisions that end in deportation, it could be disastrous for many.
You are dealing with human beings, and you're dealing with human beings at the most vulnerable time in their life, and that the impact of your decision is profound, that it really can be life or death for each person.
Tabador says by speaking out so directly, she could be putting her own career at risk, since the immigration court system is within the Department of Justice and under the control of Jeff Sessions.
Am I worried? Well, you know, I would be a fool not to be worried.
But Tabador, who's an immigrant from Iran herself, says there's too much at stake not to speak out. For the California Report, I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles.
Defendants in the criminal case stemming from the deadly 2016 warehouse fire in Oakland are expected to give statements today before they are sentenced. KQED's Alex Emsley reports.
A judge already accepted and helped broker a plea deal that avoids what would be a graphic trial over the deaths of 36 people. They died in the ghost ship warehouse that defendant Derek Almena had turned into an unpermitted living and event space, jam-packed with wood, shoddy electrical, and flammable chemicals. He's looking at a 9-year sentence. Max Harris, who lived at the warehouse and helped plan the concert that night, is looking at 6 years.
That sentencing is morally bankrupt.
Terry Ewing was a close friend of Ara Joe, who died at the warehouse.
There is no way that this sentence defers or delays or gives pause to anybody doing these kind of actions.
Many families are calling for longer sentences and asking why the city of Oakland and the building's owners, among others, have yet to be held accountable for ignoring conditions at the ghost ship. They're defendants in a civil case, expected to go to trial sometime next year. For the California Report, I'm Alex Emsley.
Now, for the record, it's hard to say something's fake news when you are caught on tape. Check out this recording made at a private fundraiser last week, where the speaker is talking about why the GOP must keep control of the House this fall.
If Sessions won't recuse and Mueller won't clear the president, we're the only ones, which is really the danger. That's why I keep, and thank you for saying that, by the way. I mean, we have to keep all these seats. We have to keep the majority.
that San Joaquin Valley Congressman Devin Nunes, a Republican and a staunch defender of President Trump, he's highly critical of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into any potential collusion with Russia by then-candidate Trump or his campaign. Nunes also has an ongoing feud with his local newspaper, the Fresno Bee, calling it fake news when it has published articles that are critical of him. Here's what his media office said about the recording. Quote, "It's unsurprising to see the left-wing media spin Chairman Nunes's routine observations as some nefarious plot, since these same media outlets spent the last year and a half touting a non-existent Russia collusion conspiracy."
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. College Futures Foundation, more graduates for a thriving California. Learn more at collegefutures.org. And Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com.
So where Icarus failed, flying too close to the sun, NASA's hoping to succeed. The Parker Space Probe is expected to launch tomorrow from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. KQED science editor Danielle Venton brings us more on this mission to touch the sun.
NASA scientists have wanted for decades to directly sample the sun's atmosphere, because for the last 60 years, they've been puzzled by a mystery.
We're hoping to learn what heats the corona.
That's Stuart Bale of the Berkeley Space Sciences Lab. Right now, he's in Florida supporting the launch. Bale led the team that made the instruments to measure the electric and magnetic fields in the sun's atmosphere, or corona. So here's the strange part.
The corona itself, we think, is millions of degrees centigrade.
That's much hotter, in fact, than the surface of the sun, which is only a couple thousand degrees. And if the sun is the source of heat, that makes no sense.
You know, it's like stepping away from a campfire and finding that it's warmer as you move away from the campfire.
It's possible that magnetic fields swirling around the sun help convert kinetic or motion energy into thermal energy in the corona. Bale's instruments will help find out if that's true. This summer, NASA released this sound from the sun, internal vibrations converted into sound waves by the Stanford Experimental Physics Lab. Maybe it can tide over sun enthusiasts while they wait for a decades-old mystery to be solved. For the California Report, I'm Danielle Venton.
And that, my friends, is the California Report for Friday, August 10th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer and Katie McMurrin, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman and Seal Muller. The rest of the staff includes John Sepulvedo, Tiffany Kamhai, Sonia Hudson, Peter Arcuni, Nina Thorson, and Polly Stryker. Ethan Lindsay is our managing editor, and Holly Kernan is the vice president of news. I'm Penny Nelson. I hope you have a great weekend.